Let's see. Go for it.
I'm just wondering if you have, because a lot of people are talking about theories about there being a pole shift in the past. And yeah. I'm wondering if you have seen in your studies any reference from like really old things to Vedic tumultuous times when the stars changed.
I've never seen any Vedic references to pole shifts.
Okay.
Though we do have reference to, it talks about, I think it's Vashishta, he went north to the place where the day was 6 months long and the night was 6 months long. So there's talk of of like that. But and who knows, maybe they like only went part way and then like did the math to calculate what that would be. You know, or did they actually go to the North Pole and experience it? Who knows? But they had that reference to like the poles and that concept, but no pole shift.
Okay.
Is mentioned. Why?
Oh, I'm just wondering, because, you know, there's the whole, there's the deluge, the great flood, which Vedic culture talks about, and all these other cultures talk about. And so some, you know, people theorize that it was a pole shift. There's lots of theories on what it could have been, but I was just interested if you'd had seen anything related to that.
Nope. No pole shift. and I mean the last pole shift according to the archaeological record was what?
Like magnetic pole shift? We can tell the magnetic pole shift, but I don't think we can tell the actual physical shifting unless we have references to the stars and cataclysms.
But the magnetic pole shift they can see in the record is like how long ago? Like millions, right?
Oh, no, it wasn't that long ago.
No? What?
It was only a couple, it was less than 100,000 years ago.
Really? Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, I haven't seen any references.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Though the big thing is what, how would somebody back then say such a thing? Like, you know, one of my arguments I was having with, a Vedic scholar this past summer when I was in the UK was, you know, there's this verse in the Brahmanas, it talks about the cups in the sky and having to readjust the cups. And I was like, that's totally talking about Ayanamsha. The guy's like, you can't call that Ayanamsha. I'm like, they're not going to call it Ayanamsha in, you know, BCE time period. Like, they're not using that term. Like, what is the term that they would use? And they would say a cup, like this grouping of stars and how we're grouping them, we're changing how we're grouping them.
Okay.
You know, they called it the cups of the Maruts, is what the, But I was trying to argue that is a reference to Ayanamsha and the fact that there is movement. Basically what we're learned, this whole calendar thing, and when we learn how to calculate the calendar, you know, where are you calculating that shift from? So let's go into the calendar.
Okay. And one more question that's relevant to this chapter.
Yeah.
So I didn't get to watch the video, but I was listening and I was looking through the book, and you made reference to, you know, the rishis dipping the in and grabbing the ghee.
Yeah.
And so I just, I guess I can find it online, but you were talking about where the cup is at different seasons, and I couldn't see what you were talking about.
It's in the back of the calendar.
Oh, wow.
Right there, my calendar.
Oh, I gotta get a copy of that.
It's online for free. All you gotta do is go to Staples and print it. Right. So in springtime, they're dumping it. Summer, they start to scoop. Autumn, it's coming out of the scoop. Winter, it's coming up. In spring, it's being dumped.
All right.
And it all is circulating around the North Star. You guys know that place, right? In the back of the calendar?
Yeah.
And so you can tell the season based upon the direction of the Big Dipper. And and in the calendar at the solstices and the equinoxes, I have in there the Big Dipper in the shape that it's supposed to be. Like, let's see.
I got
Right there, look. So for March 20th, there's the Dipper in the shape it is. You see it right there?
Oh, beautiful.
Yeah, so it's how many people noticed that, huh? So I don't know if you can see on March 20th, there's the Big Dipper hiding out in there. It's in there, hiding out, ready for the world to wake up one day.
I gotta get this year's.
Ready for the calendar to get as big as, remember what the whole Mayan, what did they call that Mayan calendar? The dream spell calendar was before 2012?
Yeah, I do remember that.
All those people were into it. I said, that's great. I'll wait till 2012 and then I'll start publishing mine. But I guess I gotta have an end of the world so that it makes it more important for people to learn it right now. The world's gonna end in 2020. Quick, learn how to read the calendar. I think the dream spell had that, you know.
Urgency
to it. Otherwise, there's no urgency to learn the Vedic calendar. It's only been around for 5,000 years and I haven't learned it yet, so why should I learn it now? All right. Vedic calendar systems. We got the day, the month, and the year. Sounds so simple, doesn't it? We got the day, the month, and the year. But it's not that easy to calculate the day, nor the month, nor the year, as all these numbers show us. Let's see. I just want to point out in this one calendar, there's lunar months and solar years, right? We got lunar months and solar years. But within that, there's solar months and also lunar years. But we have primarily the sun is the year, the moon is the month. Big hand, little hand on a clock. Everybody know what I mean by that? Big hand, little hand on a clock?
I mean, that's an interesting reference, but I'm kind of...
No, you don't know what it means? You guys know what I mean by big hand, little hand on a clock? With the solar...
Comparing to the sun and the moon?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the moon goes around creating the months, and then, I don't know, you could compare the sun to the big hand.
Sun to the hour hand. And and moon to the minute hand. So the moon's going all the way around when the sun just moves one. Moon goes all the way around, sun moves one. All the way around, and there's 12 of them.
Yeah, that's pretty cool.
So people that use these digital watches, I mean, ay ay ay. No one uses digital watches, right? Never again.
All the kids are forgetting how to use regular clocks like that. Like a lot of the teenagers I work with.
Really?
It's like foreign.
Oh my goodness.
The kids are forgetting how to count in gotikas. And gotikas. And everything.
No, I think that's the real destruction of everything. You know, like, people forget all that kind of stuff, and then technology, all of a sudden, a big solar flare destroys it all, and then everybody's too dumb to, like, recreate it, and it's all lost again. You know, that's the realm. That's the possibility for the future.
It's important to preserve this.
All right. So... Solar years, lunar months, just like a clock, hour hand, minute hand. What do we want to talk about? When a month of months, what are a month of months? We got Purnamanta and Amanta.
Last month,
It's Amanta is when you mark the beginning of the month by Amavasya, and
yep.
Purnamanta is when it's full moon.
Yeah. So different parts of India use both, and standardized, but in different places they will use different things. It's India, but they're trying to standardize the Amanta. Which is Amavasya, the very end of Amavasya, that last moment where it's where syzygy, where the sun and the moon are the exact same degree, And when they leave that degree, it becomes pratipad. So that's the moment of our new moon. So when we say new moon to new moon, that's what we mean. It's not amavasya to amavasya per se, or port, you know, it's that the moment of syzygy. Syzygy. What's syzygy?
I'm not sure.
Sun and the moon, the same degree.
Okay.
Syzygy.
All right.
Exact same degree, syzygy.
Is that a Greek?
That is a Greek term, but that is the proper, that is the scientific term used, coming from the Greek. All right. Now here I give the mean new moon occurs every 29.5305879 46, and I'm rounding up there days. And I just took it to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. I just took it to 9 decimal places because that's the standard to take it to either 6 or 9 decimal places. What do I mean by mean new moon?
The average time it takes.
The average. What would not be average?
My mean, you're adding up the lengths, all the lengths that you get of the new moon cycle, and then you do, well, I don't know. How would you get the mean? You're kind of dealing with a lot of...
You guys, what do I mean by mean new moon?
Yeah, it's just the average time it takes for the moon to go from new moon to new moon, because the moon can fluctuate in speed and all that as it rotates. So,
and so there's just a little difference between mean and average. Average is where you take all the different, you know, sometimes it's a little bigger, sometimes it's a little lower, and you add them up, and you take the average. Mean is where you graph them, and then you find the midpoint, which is, it's very minor difference, but it is a difference than average. So mean is that, you know, most likely place for it to be.
That's between the extremities of, like, the quickest and the slowest.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. Which is slightly different than average. And by very minimal, but it's important to know that difference. So we got the new moon cycle. And then we have the anomalistic month. What's the anomalistic month? It's a hard one. Somebody gets a bonus point or something if they get it right. Come on, Frank. Anomalistic month. So the anomalistic month becomes very important for eclipses. And it also becomes important for us to calculate new moon, full moon, and the various tithis. Anomalistic month is also very important for whether we have a long tithi or a short tithi. So the anomalistic month is the moon is moving not in a circle around the earth, but it's moving in a elliptic. You know, it's an kind of ellipse shape, right? And so when it's at the smaller end, it's moving really fast. And when it's at that long end, it's moving really slow. And it's really, on a certain level, moving the same. It just, from our geocentric perspective, it's changing in how fast it's moving through the sky. And so where we see it relative to us, it's going to be a different speed. So it's basically getting fast, then slowing down, then fast, then slowing down, then fast, then slowing down. Now, what happens with the new moon, so if we have this elliptic, there's a new moon moving all across there, all the way around. You guys see in my finger how that goes? So there can be, and so we have apogee, and perigee. And so there can be the new moon near the apogee, the new moon near the perigee, the new moon, you know, it can be any which way in there. And the whole concept of, you know, how some people, and it's getting excessive the way people are using it now. There's this concept of supermoon. And So this concept of supermoon is based upon the apogee and the perigee, and because the when not only does it change how fast the moon is moving, but it also changes how big or small the moon is in the sky. And so the supermoon is where it's very, it's that time where it's very close to the, is it the apogee or the perigee? I think it's to the apogee that it gets very close to. And so that's what makes the moon really big. And
I'm still here, I'm just listening.
Okay. And so that time it gets very close to that apogee point, it becomes really big, and they're calling it the supermoon. But now people are starting to do like 3 supermoons in a year, and it's like, okay, what? You use every single moon that's near? Like, yeah, it's kind of they're over. You know, like, I mean, if supermoon, it's a very new concept. People didn't. Somebody recently coined it, I think, in the last 10 years. That moon, full moon, closest to that point. But to me, it's like, okay, let's have 1 supermoon a year, not like 3 or 4 of them, because then it just, it kind of...
Not super.
It's not super anymore if there's 3 of them, you know? But so that is the anomalistic month. And so the anomalistic month, it's determining how long and or short a tithe is. And... Because sometimes
Well, basically, I mean, the anomalistic month is just taking the speed of the moon into account, right?
Yes. Okay. Yeah. And the thing is, they did not understand that the moon was moving in an ellipse, but they knew that it was moving at a different speed, and so the early, like, ancient, you know, Babylonian clay tablets, that they have the anomalistic months in them. And the earliest Vedic Siddhantas have the anomalistic month there. So they knew the speed was changing. They just didn't ever sit there and put it on an ellipse and say that that was the reason. It wasn't till Copernicus, not Copernicus.
Copernicus.
Kepler was the guy that said, this is why we have the, you know, he's the one that said, it's an ellipse, they're moving in an ellipse, that's why the anomalistic month is being created. And he had the luck of a very big telescope to make that, you know, inference, where without the telescope, you know, they were, and the Greeks would have never, ever, ever have gotten it, because the Greeks believed that the planets were moving in perfect circles. They were like, everything, it's perfect circle up there. And so we had this anomalistic month, and they were just like, why is it changing in this perfect circle? Like, and it was almost like this religious belief that they were moving in perfect circles. So they would have, like, never in a million years have been able to understand the anomalistic month. The Indians, they weren't as geometrical. They were more they were all about the mathematical arithmetic. So for them, they had all these charts, and they're like, look, every so, you know, they're like, it's 27.5546 days, this many, you know, they were all thinking in numbers. And all they cared about was the cycles of the numbers. And so they never put it into a circle, into an ellipse. It was, you know, like a weird dichotomy. The Greeks couldn't get it because they believed in perfect circles. The Indians didn't get it because they didn't even care about circles or ellipses. You know, they only cared about the numbers. And so it took Kepler with his telescope to give us this ellipse. But that's what the anomalistic month is. It's that cycle of that. An important thing with the anomalistic month that I don't talk about in here is when that moon is moving fast, we have a situation where... And so, who's been following the tithies every day? Oh, no. Maggie? Tithy every day?
Oh, I mean, I look at it. I've been looking at it more, but not every day.
Okay. No. So if you start paying attention to when the tithies are changing, you'll notice that part of the month, there's a day where there often is two tithies will change on one day. And then there'll be a time period where there'll be two tithies for one day. You know, 2 days in a row will be the same tithi. And then somewhere else, like a tithi disappears. So the anomalistic month is giving us the tithi disappearing and the tithi gaining. And let's see. Let's see if I can find one real fast.
Did you just say because of the pace that the moon is moving at? Like if it's moving slow, then you'll have two tithis lasting, or one tithi lasting 2 days.
Exactly. Exactly. So let's
see. Freedom, I totally get the analogy because a track, you know, that I ran on for years is an oval shape. And the corners are always where you can catch up to people or pass people because you're moving sort of more quickly. And then the straightaways last forever.
Yep. And so that's the moon. That's the whole concept right there. And so that's the tithies with the days. K8, K9. All right. So if we look at March 22nd. So and the 21st, 22nd, 23rd. So on the 21st, it becomes Krishna Navami at 23:49. And so it changed at midnight. And then on March 22nd, there's no tithi change. Not until 0:58 on March 23rd. So the thing is, we have that same tithi happening there, which it's not a sunrise. That's more of a midnight overlap. But we have sunrise overlaps as well, which is more important in the Vedic. And then we have March 26th, where we have at midnight is Krishna 13, K13, and then at 22:15 that same night it becomes K14. So we have a tithi disappearing because it never shows up. So this anomalistic month And Maggie, you know, Maggie has the cognate moon in it, right?
What does that mean?
Maggie comes from Margaret, which Margaret's an old name of the moon. Wow. It's a whole lunar, it's a lunar name. So it's Maggie on the racetrack, you know?
what I was a little confused with was, I get the definitions, but why... synodic month is 29.5 days.
Oh, well, we'll get there. We haven't done synodic month.
Okay.
We don't care about synodic month till we get to the nodic month until we get to eclipses. Anomalous. First, we got mean new moon, new moon. We got anomalistic months. That's what we care about right now. Sorry, Frank.
It's okay.
We got a whole section on the they're called draconian months. That's the official term. I was actually I'm gonna lecture for an hour at Lightning in a Bottle this year on draconic months. I'm calling it being on the right side of an eclipse. You know, it's this big spiritual gathering kind of thing. So I figured, what do you make it? Being on the right side of an eclipse. That sounds good, right?
That's definitely a good idea.
For that crowd.
Yeah, and people are really into eclipses and they don't understand
them. So I figured it's perfect. And particularly being that we have the most murderous eclipse coming in August.
Oh, my goodness.
The eclipse that happens in August is the eclipse that got Donald Trump elected. That August...
What day in August?
August 17th. That eclipse got Donald Trump elected. That's his eclipse. That eclipse shows that he's our president.
It's on his
lugna, exactly. And it cuts from Seattle to Atlanta. It destroys the U.S., People keep asking me whether I think Cal Exit is a possibility. You know about Cal Exit over there in Utah? You know about Brexit? Where Britain left the EU?
Recently?
Oh my goodness. This summer, Britain voted to leave the EU, and so it's a 2-year process, but they're leaving the EU. And they're right now collecting signatures, so it's not 100%, but they're working to get California to leave the United States and become its own country on the 2018 ballot. And if it gets on the ballot, and if people vote yes, then Jerry Brown, our governor, has no option but to file for Cal exit.
So I think it's quite a process after that, though, too. So
it's quite a process, but with that eclipse, it's that eclipse is a potential.
That's I mean, that's like civil war type stuff.
That's and that's what the eclipse is. The eclipse is like that level. It's the eclipse that got Donald Trump elected. So let's just. That's the end of the story, you know. It's. Do I need to say any more about the energy of that eclipse? You know how nasty that eclipse is.
I'll be at home.
All right. So somehow we got into eclipses. So we got anomalistic months. Oh, draconian months. We're not there. Draconian. We're. We got a month to months. So tropical and sidereal year. What's the difference?
The tropical year is based on the seasons, basically.
Which how would we calculate it mathematically?
Oh, you start at the equinox.
Based on the equinox. To the next equinox, you got it.
And the sidereal one is actually based on the stars and the ionomptia.
Ionomptia is the difference between the two.
Okay.
But what am I measuring from what to what? In the sidereal year?
The movement of the sun.
From what to what?
From one star fully around to that same star.
Which star?
Is that the Chitra?
Opposite Chitra.
Chitra.
Yeah. So it's the 180 degrees opposite Chitra.
Okay.
So it's the beginning of Aries. Zero degrees Aries, which is based on the opposite Chitra.
Okay.
Yep. Okay. Good job. All right. High five.
Yeah.
Got it all right. And so let's see. And so the difference between those two is the ionomptia. And now the tropical year is called, it's Sayana. Sa-ayana. Sa means with, ayana means equinox. The sidereal year is called Nir-ayana. Not with the equinox. Near Ayana and Sa Ayana. Now, it's interesting terminology, and this is one my buddy Eric always brings up. He's like, he says, well, if truly the ancient, you know, holiday calendar was based on the near Ayana, why is there the term Ayana in there? You're basically saying not with the equinoxes. Why not just say the, you know, the Sankranti something something. You know what I mean? Like literally in the name means not with the Ayana, where the other one is with the Ayana, with the equinox. The other one's not with the equinox. So sidereal is not with the equinox. Right? You got the terminology and the implications of that. All right, interaction of solar and lunar months.
I've got a quick question on that.
Yeah.
I know you made some distinctions, like with your articles about, you know, separating those two. One used to keep with, you know, the festivals linked to the seasons and this kind of idea. How do you make sense of, like, in Vishnu Purana, I mean, Parashara is talking about the signs and the names of the signs and linking them to the equinoxes. Or, you know, in Surya Siddhanta, they're linking it to it. But
Fully. And the big thing is what was the time period, you know, that based upon the Sanskrit, when is Vishnu Purana dated? Do you know?
I mean, it's one of the older ones. That's all I know. It's like, I don't know exactly what they dated at, though.
I had a client who's a publisher of art books, and he brought me a whole stack of these really super cool art books today. My goodness, I was like, he didn't know how happy he made me. Oh. He's just brought him to show me what he does. So, let's see, now, you looking at that. The big thing is Vishnu Purana, the Sanskrit dates to around the first century AD, or what are they, CE is the proper politically correct term, common error. Surya Siddhanta is a few hundred years after that. So they were written when the equinoxes and solstices when the equinoxes and the signs were in alignment. And that's just the end of the story with that, you know. It's yeah. and were they differentiating in that time period? They were not. And and you know, there's some people that say and they use that as the reasoning of why signs were imported from Greece, but. Signs being imported by Greece, you know, is I consider that silly because, you know, right in the Afghanistan area was this huge kingdom during that time period. And in that kingdom, it was a Hindu-Greek kingdom where it was people had names that were half Greek, half Sanskrit. And that was the standard. And the Yavanajataka was, I mean, his name is half Greek, half Sanskrit. So we have this place in Afghanistan that's a Hindu-Greek kingdom that's the standard of and in that realm, the Iranian, I'm calling it Iranian, the Babylonian astrology, the Indian astrology, and the Greek astrology, and I shouldn't even say Greek astrology, because there was no Greek astrology. There was nothing but Babylonian, Egyptian, and Indian astrology at that time period. And the Greeks, have you heard my reference to Alexander the Great, what he said when he came to Babylon? So he had already conquered Babylon and was the king. And then he went on to battle all through Afghanistan and Gujarat in India. And then he came home, and as he's about to come back into his, he decided he loved Babylon so much, that's where he wanted to live. And so he's coming back, he's ready to go inside, and the astrologers come out, and they say, no, you don't want to come inside. It's bad stars. Just wait 3 days. They're like, wait 3 days for things to shift. And so he called his most trusted advisor, and so this is recorded. And he said, they just told me I can't go in there for 3 days. Like, what's the deal? And so he went and he consulted and he came back. And what he said to Alexander is, we're Greeks. We read the entrails of birds. We don't believe in this star stuff. Just go in. Who cares? This star stuff is silly. So this is our statement of astrology in Greece before Alexander. All of a sudden, 200 years later, and it took 200 years for astrological texts to start showing up in Greece. So anybody that's telling me that Greece brought it somewhere, and when you look at the first few texts, they're like, well, we went to Egypt and this is what they taught us. There is no such thing as Greek astrology. There's what the Greeks imported, you know? But during that time period, when we look in Manilius, and Manilius was one of the early Greek texts, and Manilius did, I think he did only signs, no planets. Don't quote me on that. He might have done only planets, no signs. But I'm pretty sure he did only signs, no planets. And in there he says, and he learned from Egypt, and he says, some people believe that the signs, that the spring equinox is Aries. Some people believe that the spring equinox is 8 degrees Aries. So, you know, he states that there's this difference of opinion. And it was Ptolemy who later said, no, we're just going to do 0 degrees. You know, 0 degrees is what we're going to use for Aries. Very simple. We're using a simple system. And all Ptolemy was is he's a guy who collected everybody else's stuff, and he put it into a nice package. So somewhere Ptolemy picked up this 0 degrees Aries concept, which is also mentioned in Manilius. But Manilius is giving us an option where Ptolemy says we're just going to use this one. And so what we see in these Puranas is definitely coming from that 0 degrees Aries tradition that was spread throughout Egypt, you know, that was percolating into Greece, and it was percolating into Greece from Egypt and Afghanistan and India. And when I say India, Afghanistan was a Hindu culture at that time period. So we really can't say, to separate, if we say Hindustan instead of India, then Afghanistan was Hindustan until the 8th century. So I've gone on a tirade, but does that make sense?
Yeah, but if you're, you know, linking the Vishnu Puran to the time when the solstices align.
When that author wrote what he wrote.
Don't you date Parashara older, though? I mean, than that time period?
When,
or in the tradition, at least?
When the information in it was passed down, when it was written down exactly. If you look at the Vishnu Purana, there's different portions from different time periods. And that's, you know, if we come at it from a religious perspective and we believe that it was the actual words of Parashara, we're going to have a hard time. And the thing is, when we look at the Vedas, there was a really strict format of not changing anything. When we look at the Puranas, you know, it was not about keeping it accurate. It was about being a good story. And so it was told in various poetry, and different poets reworked it, and they changed it slightly. And we can see that was the case, because in the different Puranas, we see the same story being told with different elements and in different ways. And in some Puranas, we can see, oh, this Purana completely copied it from that Purana. And in other ones, we can see, oh, this was a completely, you know, who knows, the story is so different. They were probably separated for a few hundred years, that story, before it was written down. And some of them might have been separated for 1,000 years before they were written down. So the Puranas were primarily this oral tradition, and their written form, and the written form to where it came in and didn't change anymore was a much later situation. So we have to differentiate the stories and where the stories are coming from and when they were put onto bamboo leaf and not changed anymore. And those are different dates. When the material from the Vishnu Purana, good parts of it go way back later. When it was put down on paper and frozen, we're looking at the first century CE.
Okay.
And
so
you think,
Sam, I have a question too. Yeah. It sounds like you need to finish.
No, go for it.
I'm sorry if this is silly, but so you're talking about like Greece and how astrology happened there later. So the Western Zodiac, like as we know it, with the tropical Zodiac, where did that come from then?
The tropical Zodiac?
Yeah, like the one that if we think of Western astrology.
Ptolemy.
Okay, but you said that he was using 0 degrees Aries.
Exactly.
You mean with the vernal equinox or with the sun?
With zero degrees Aries as the equinox is what he okay. decided. And at his time okay. period, you see, during his time, and that's why I compared it to Manilius, because Manilius said some people are using 8, and I think he might have even said some people are using 10. You know, so he was saying that there's not an agreement about where exactly Aries is beginning. And that's one of the earliest Greek texts, is that statement. And Ptolemy was a later text. And so he decided to freeze it. Now, the thing about Ptolemy freezing it is Ptolemy was also coming into a time period where previous to him, there was a solely lunar calendar, which is what our topic is. And Julius Caesar decided to freeze the calendar and use a tropical calendar. So by him using a tropical calendar, it was like really easy to also do a tropical astrology. Because it just made it just fit with the culture.
Okay.
All right. And let's just real fast. Julius Caesar, what you look up the year Julius Caesar, I'm gonna look up the year of Ptolemy. What do you have for Julius Caesar?
And he did that to the calendar, you mean?
Just Julius Caesar's life.
Well, it says that calendar took effect on January 45 BC.
So 45 BC, there was a tropical calendar being used. And I don't know the exact time period that the Ptolemy's astrological work was done, but he lived from 100 to 170. So he was born, raised, and lived on a tropical calendar. So in his mindset, it was real easy to use a tropical calendar for astrology.
Okay.
And some people say that he came up with it, but he didn't come up with anything. He was copying tables, copying translation of Babylonian texts. He was a collator, not a creator. And some of the things that he wrote about, he didn't even understand. He was just putting it all together. He was like a professor in a university, Ptolemy. Mm-hmm. All right. Slightly off topic there.
Yeah. Kind of.
But do you see how like important like time period also like plays into the factors of how people think and why they made the choices they make? Like if Ptolemy was lived in a time period where it was a solely lunar calendar, would he have like made a different call? And would he have said it's 8 degrees instead of, you know, it's vernal equinox? Right? All right. So interaction of solely lunar months. So we got to define Sankranti. What's Sankranti?
It's when the sun is at 0 degrees.
Hits 0 degrees. So now what day is the day of Sankranti?
That's a good question.
Well, there's 12 of them.
Well, there's 12 Sankrantis, but which day? Like, so if the sun changed signs and became 0 degrees at 11 in the morning. It's past sunrise. It was in a sign at sunrise, but then it changed signs at 11. Is the day Sankranti or not? What if it changed at 3 o'clock? Yeah.
I realize there's different definitions, but I would say that one.
Which one?
Well, if it changes at 11, that day is
Sankranti?
That's my feeling, yes.
What if it changes at 4 o'clock in the afternoon?
What's up?
What if it changes at 4 o'clock in the afternoon?
Still, it's that day. It happened that day. That's the day.
What if it changed at 8 o'clock that night?
It's still that day, technically.
Yeah.
Well, I imagine if it happened at the night, it would be the next day, maybe. Yeah, I mean, that's my guess.
Let's see, I did a real quick summary. Oh no, I just said other parts. I just said the rules in other parts are different parts of different in different parts of the countries. It's too. I mean, I could do a whole page in how Sankrantis calculate it in different parts of India, but some places it has to be 0 degrees at sunrise in order for that day to be Sankranti, and if it's not, then the next day is Sankranti. Some people do before 9. Some people do before 12. Some people do before 3. Some do before sunset. Some do before midnight. So we have like different parts of India would consider Sankranti different. Which one do I use? I use the 3 o'clock.
Okay.
For me, in the calendar that I make, because I had to decide, I'd start the month on Sankranti. So I had to be like, okay, I'm starting the month on Sankranti. Now I gotta like, whose Sankranti am I gonna use? And I determined to use 3 o'clock because the big thing about Sankranti is nothing gets accomplished on that day. It's the best day to take off from work. And so 3 o'clock, you know, you can get a good day of work in before 3 o'clock, right?
Yeah.
And if it's after 3 o'clock, who cares if, you know, the last 2 hours of work don't get anything accomplished. So that's why I use 3 o'clock. If it happens before 3 o'clock, then I call the day Sankranti. If it happens after 3 o'clock, I call the next day Sankranti. So I'm using a very, very utilitarian definition. And really, you know, the Sankranti as I teach it in the calendar and for all that kind of stuff, it's the best day to go to the beach. We even call it Beach Day in Nevada City. And we call it Beach Day because, you know, if you go to the beach and you hang out by the river all day, you kind of feel like you got all this work to do. Oh my gosh, I can't spend the whole day by the river. I got this to do and that to do, and I gotta read and I gotta write and I gotta do this and I gotta plant that and I gotta build this. You know what I mean? Can you relax? No. But the thing is, on Sankranti, if you build a fence, the next day you're going to have to dig up the fence and move it over because you did it. It's not even, or something's wrong with it. That's a Sankranti. And once I said, I'm going to go crystal mining. I said, it's Sankranti. I'm going to take off and go crystal mining. But the thing is, I take all the crystals to India and I have them turned into beads and they get sold in the local stores. So it is kind of, I do make money crystal mining. So spent the whole day looking for the mine, drove by it about 13 times, and ended up on all kinds of weird hills and all this kind of stuff. Finally found the mine a few months later, but beautiful rose quartz mine.
Let's see.
If you were doing something important, couldn't you just look if, you know, if sure. It was in that first degree, and once it gets out of the first degree, can you go do some stuff?
Yeah, I don't know. Can you see that? Look at that.
Nice.
That's from the mine that I went looking for on a Sankranti and never found. Had to go back on a non-Sankranti day. Yeah. So once it's out of the degree, so let's say it was, and so this is a debate, you know, some people say if it was Sankranti at sunrise, the whole day is out. Like, I use 0 degrees. As soon as it becomes 1 degree, I say a function is possible. If you're doing a Muhurta.
Yeah.
The big thing about
looking for a day off.
If you're looking for a day off, then you want to do the Sankranti before 3 o'clock, you know? And really, you got to take off on Sankranti. You have to go hang out by the river. You don't have a choice. Because the work you do is going to mess things up more than help things. So you actually get more done by taking off on that day.
But if it was out of Sankranti, like you were saying, if after 3, if it turns Sankranti, you do the next day. But then
It stays in about 24 hours, plus or minus half an hour.
Okay.
Our next class might be Sankranti.
That's what I was just looking at.
Our next class.
It is Sankranti.
Our next. No, the Sankranti happens at.
sun enters Pisces at 5 in the morning on Tuesday, which means by 5 something in the morning on Wednesday, it will be complete. So it will not be Sankranti by the time we have class.
That's good, because that's my birthday, and I don't need a Sankranti birthday.
You do want a Sankranti birthday. That way you can take the whole day off.
Wouldn't that mean that I would take the whole year off?
No!
Is it your Vedic birthday?
Yeah, you...
No, that's as the end of the year for me.
Yeah, but Tithi Pravesh is how you base the year, and if you're born on a Sankranti... It doesn't have to be a Sankranti. So, yeah, Tithi Pravesh is what matters for that, not your Gregorian birthday.
Okay.
How old are you turning on the next week? So next class is your birthday?
Yeah, I guess so. I'll be 30 years old.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness. You're going to be old now. Maybe wrinkles are going to be coming and, you know, you'll wake up.
I have them already.
You what?
I have them already.
Oh my. Are you going to, you'll be with us though? Wednesday night? Okay. Party on, enjoy the weekend. Sankrantis, we're religiously obligated to take off on Sankrantis.
Yes.
As Jyotishis.
Yes.
As astrologers, we are obligated to take off on Sankrantis. And the sun will punish you excessively if not. And I remember I was working a place and because when I first came back from India and, you know, I did construction all week and I did Jyotish readings at night and then taught classes on the weekends. And so I was doing construction and the Sankrantis would come up and I'd tell everybody, I'm like, today's not a good day, like this, and they'd all say, you're crazy, you just, and then maybe three or four times I did that, they're like, Sankranti, okay, we're all off today, we're calling on, like they call, like everybody would call in because they knew that, like, literally if you pour cement on a Sankranti, then you're chiseling it up the next day and you've wasted more time. Because if you take off on that Sankranti, the next day can actually be productive and not cleaning up the mess you made. There's a jeweler downstairs, and she was working on a Sankranti, and she had, like, spent 3 days making this one piece. And then on the Sankranti, that morning, she went to just buff it up to finish it, and it flew off, broke, shattered. She spent the whole day redoing it, and it didn't redo properly. And so, oh my gosh. I was like, yeah, it's beach day. She's like, it's beach day, and you didn't tell me. That's I say beach day to the people that don't know what Sankranti is, you know? All right, so we all got Sankranti. We got that there's different calculations. So then if you guys read that article that's online, it talks about how the solar, the doors and the hinges. So the lunar months are based on the solar month that the new moon happens in, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what happens if there's two new moons in one solar month?
Then one of them gets lost.
Added. Adikmas.
Two new moons in one, one gets kshaya. Right? No, let's see.
Oh.
What, one, so one becomes kshaya and it's lost. And then if that new moon gets spread out and there's a whole month that goes where there isn't a new moon. That's when we're getting the kshaya, and when there's two, then we get the adhika. All right. So two new moons within one solar month gives us an adhika, and when it becomes a long month, and remember we talked about mean, it was the mean new moon to new moon. So occasionally, based upon that anomalistic month, there can be a longer month, and a whole solar month can go with no new moon. And then we have a Kshaya Masa that happens. It disappears. And that happens every 50 years. And then the double new moon in a single month happens about every 3 years. Every 3 1/3 years. And so we got the names, how that's all working, and the doors and the hinges. And so I did Kali, if we look on page 54, we have the beginning of Kali Yuga. So year 3102 BCE. On that year, the new moon was on the It's on the beginning of the year. So we have Mesha Sankranti, and at Mesha Sankranti it's new moon. And so we follow all the way over. So there's within the year there's 12 lunations. So how many lunations are there in a year?
What you just said.
There was 12 plus what? There's how many lunations in a year? 12.3.
Okay.
So so there's 29 something days, right? So if you look that first top right hand column, there's 12 lunations and 10.9 days. And then it becomes a new year. So then the next year. Okay, so that's years 0 to 1. Now year 1 to 2, there's 12 lunations. And now there's 21.7 days. And then the next year, because you see there gets to be this 10.9 each time, right? So then instead of having 12 lunations, because it was 12.3, and so there's these 2/3. And so that third year, there's a 3/3 and they become a whole. So instead of 12 lunations, it becomes 13 lunations. And in this year, it was and 3 days. And then we get the next year, it becomes 12 lunations and 14 days, because that 3 days gets carried over with the 10, right? And then we have 12 lunations and 24 days. And then that next year, that 10 adds up, and it becomes 13 lunations. So the years that we have that 13 lunations, if there's 13 lunations, it means we're getting an adhikamasa. It means that there's two new moons happening in 1 month. And then it means there's going to be an extra month inserted. So this is an important calculation with the solely lunar calendar. Now, when a month is inserted, which month do we use? So if it's in the month of Shravana, there becomes two Shravanas. Which Shravana do we use? Which Shravana has the holidays?
The first one
is Adhika. So the first one is the extra, and the whole day, the whole month is considered holy.
Isn't that just a time to do like practices and not start anything new kind of time?
That's what some say. Don't start anything new, do spiritual practices, go on pilgrimage. How many people with jobs in this modern age can do that? Not many, but and then the second month after that, that's the one where we celebrate the standard holidays. That's considered the natural month, the Nija month. All right. So we all get how the calendar's working and how the intercalary month is jumping in there. Varsha Pravesh, beginning of the year. What's the beginning of the year?
The Mesha Sankranti.
What about Makara Sankranti?
No.
That too. Depends what you're doing.
Oh yeah, for different purposes.
So for different purposes, there's different beginnings of the year.
Course.
Yeah. So we have the beginning of the year at when and Makara Sankranti, we have the Mesha Sankranti,
which is also connected to the spring equinox. The Makara Sankranti is connected to the solstice. We have the financial new year, which happens in the full moon of Ashwina, a new moon of Ashwina, which is the fall time. So we have these different beginnings of the year. So this is where I like to talk about. So if we look, so right now, Makara Sankranti in India is one of these big celebration, big New Year celebrations. Let's see. Big New Year celebrations. So, and it happens, when's Makara Sankranti? Approximately?
It's going to be in winter.
Of course it's going to be in winter.
Well, it should be the solstice. They usually celebrate it like, what, January 14th or something?
It's around January 14th, 15th. And it's because that's when the sun enters sidereal Capricorn. And so they're celebrating that as the new moon. And they're doing what in the ancient texts was celebrated on the winter solstice. Now, officially, according to Muhurta, you're not supposed to get married 2 months before the winter solstice. So that November, December, you know, that very end of is not considered beneficial for marriage, particularly that last month. And so religious people will not give marriage dates in December.
Is that because of the sun or?
Because you're just before the winter solstice. It's like the darkest time of the year. You're going into darkness, right? And but the big thing is and then after Makara Sankranti they give wedding dates again. Oh, I'm disappeared.
Your feed is messed up.
Yeah, I see it. You can still hear me?
Oh, dude. It was choppy. It's a little choppy, but.
I think Maggie's making lots of noise, too.
I think I'm messing things up.
It's just there's this noise. There's a.
Yeah. Try muting when you're. No, I'm not.
Let's see.
Yeah, that's better, I think.
Hopefully it comes back on. Let's see. So the thing is, they give this muhurta where they're saying that you gotta wait till the sun is increasing again. So the days are increasing. But yet they're giving Makara Sankranti, because the text, in the muhurta text, Makara Sankranti is the winter solstice. Even in the muhurta text, Frank. So the thing is do we not give... You know, like, I personally give muhurtas after winter solstice. And some more religious Hindus, they're like, oh, that's too, you know, and I'm like, because they're using Makara Sankranti instead. So for the religious people, I give after Makara Sankranti just because they're, you know, stuck on that. But for me, I start giving muhurtas right after the winter solstice. Just because... That's what the intention of those muhurta texts were. Now we have a situation where, so if winter solstice is December 20th, 21st, right? What was it this past year? Let's see, I'll look at what it is. In this coming year, it's going to be December 21st. So winter solstice is December 21st, right? Now, Makara Sankranti is January 14th. When we look at Shivaratri, Shivaratri is the Krishna Chaturdashi, the K14. In most texts, it lists in Capricorn. But their definition of Capricorn is winter solstice.
What do you...
So there. So if we have a text that its definition is Makara Sankranti, the air that is it's they're giving a tropical definition of Capricorn. Okay, so they're saying that Makara starts, Capricorn starts at winter solstice on. And they say that Shivaratri is the new moon in Capricorn. The new moon when the sun's in Capricorn. Do they mean the sidereal Capricorn or do they mean tropical Capricorn? Now what happens if December 21st is the winter solstice and on January 1st is a new moon. So if we use a tropical calendar, that new moon in January 1st is Shivaratri. If we're using a sidereal, you know, chart, then it's the new moon. If that was on the 1st, you'd have to wait all the way to February 1st to that next new moon. Okay. For Shivaratri. So there's a big split, and this is it's a major issue happening in India right now. Which of those new moons is going to be Shivaratri? Now, if the new moon just happens to fall on January 16th, everybody agrees that's Shivaratri. But when it's not, we're getting people celebrating Shivaratri on different, you know, the people that are using the tropical religious calendar and the people that are using the sidereal religious for a religious calendar, they're celebrating on different days.
Sounds like a confusing place.
You know, that's India. in the world right now, Bali uses the tropical calculations. They use the new moon that happens after winter solstice. For them, that is Shivaratri. And they're pretty, that's their Hindu calendar. The government of India is tried to implement that, and the priest said, absolutely not, are you crazy? And they rebelled against it, and they're sticking to the sidereal calculation. Now, and Frank has read, my argument is for holidays, we should use the tropical calendar. For, you know, astrology, we should use the sidereal. And some people, they think, you know, it's, if we go tropical for the holidays, we should go tropical for the astrology. Or if we're going sidereal for the astrology, we should go sidereal for the holidays. Some people think it's all or nothing. And I disagree. There's no reason to differentiate them, yeah.
I mean, are some festivals and practices too could be considered seasonal based practices, and some might be more, I don't know, spiritual or religious, where it might make sense to use sidereal calculations for it? Or, I mean, have you seen that at all?
You know, I've played with that. That was one of my ideas, and there's one of the biggest, most loudmouth supporter of going tropical. He's you know, I brought that up to him. I said, well, what, you know, are these holidays, you know, seasonal based, or are they, you know, astronomically based? Like, show me the difference, prove which is which. And, you know, he just ignored me because he couldn't answer. That's what he does. He just ignores any of the questions that I throw at him that he can't answer. But yeah, I looked at that, and you know, at the moment my calendar uses the sidereal dates just because that's the standard in India, and most people want to know what the sidereal dates are. And so I've been debating, like, you know, maybe in the future I'll put a little chart in the back that gives the tropical dates just as a variation. But the big thing is how do we test it? You know, how do we know which Shivaratri is going to be, you know, giving the best results?
Get a grant.
But so this is a big, it's a big deal. It's a big thing going on in India right now, that difference. And the Shivaratri makes it really clear why it's such a big deal, right? It's a completely different day.
completely different moon. Whether we're using the sun, the sidereal Sankranti, or we're using a tropical Sankranti. All right. Other cylindrical systems, seasons. Let's see, we're gonna get seasons, we're gonna get sunrise, Matanaka. I wanted to get the draconic months, but I guess we're not gonna do draconic months. All right, so seasons. What's the deal with the seasons? Somebody explain seasons.
Seasons are caused by the angle of the Earth as it moves through space in relation to the sun.
Okay. How many seasons are there in the Vedic pantheon?
Well, because I'm looking at the book here, I can see
six. Exactly. Oh, yeah, it depends. It depends on what text.
What region?
But, In general, what's the one that we utilize?
Six.
So we're using six seasons of 2 months each. And I give this little correlation here. It takes 72 years for the precession, the Ayanamsha, to move 1 degree in the zodiac. 72 years, 1 degree. Based on that, it takes 2,160 years for the Ayanamsha to move 1 sign, which means it takes 4,320 years to move 1 Ritu. How many?
4,320, you said?
4,320. Where else is that number showing up at in the data that we've looked at so far?
Oh, you told us to remember that number a while ago.
I can't
remember in relation.
Where did it show up? Page 47. So an ayana is 3 ritu or 6 masa or 12 pakshas or 180 solar days or 4,320 hours. So an ayana, half a year, is 4,320 hours. It takes the ayanamsha 4,320 years to move through 2 signs, a ritu. And let's see, page 42. So in a day, not a day night, not an ahoratra, but just from sunrise to sunset, there is 10,800 prana. In a day night, there's 21,600 prana. 21,600 breath in a day night. In 2 day nights, how many breaths?
4,320.
Exactly. So we have in 2 days, there's the 43,200 breaths. In 2 days, and in 2 signs, the Ayanamsha. To move through 2 signs, it takes 4,320 years. So we see this very interesting number repeating again and again. And I'm going to say again, take a little note, remember where that is, because I'm going to ask you again, where else does that show up when it comes up again?
Okay.
So we got number of breaths in 2 days.
Hours and a half year.
And number of years
for the Ayanamsha to move through a Ritu. Two signs. Just like 2 days. Let's see. Anything else about the seasons?
I know that you know, the number repeats, but I mean, is there... I mean, something else we can extract from it, you know?
We're getting there. We're getting there.
Okay.
we get to where that number is the magic number, and we're not there yet. Besides the fact that all the New Age people are all about the 432 hertz reality, but that's a...
Yeah, it's thrown around a lot.
Oh, it's thrown around a lot, and it's right there, and we see it repeating.
Yeah.
And we'll get to where it even shows up more. But that's where this 432 hertz is coming from. It's right there. It's a natural frequency of time that's showing up in everything. And what is it, the tune, that it's normally 430 or 440? It's normally 440 instead of 432. And traditionally, you know, there's this whole debate. Was it originally 432 or was it 440? But any which way. Here we have, this is why we have our 432. Seasons, what else about the seasons? Online I have a whole big thing. They split it into three. I wrote it for one article and they split it into three articles. Three articles on the seasons. And Indians love the seasons. There's a whole... You know how there's like haikus and what are the haikus? Is that what the Zen people write? Where it's so many, it's like 575. Yeah. Then there's limericks. Yeah. Then there's sonnets. So there's just like that. There's this whole division of Indian poetry that's about the seasons. And they have like just this whole thing that it's all about describing the seasons. In the winter, the snow and the chilliness and cuddling in my bed, I have to, you know, it's like there's this whole complete Sanskrit poetry realm that's just Ritu, that's all about the Ritus. And
what's that called?
I don't know, but if you look on the article that I have online, I give a bunch of references to the different texts that you can
look. It's on your website?
On the Sutra Journal website. And so this poetry, they connected the seasons to the emotions. And so the different seasons, it's all about kind of invoking the emotions that go with that season. And I was trying to find a certain poetry, you know, and poetry is not spiritual texts. Everybody, when they think of India, they're all like, oh, religious texts, oh, Buddhism, oh, Hinduism and Upanishads. But when we get into the poetry texts, they're not spiritual. They're very worldly. And, you know, when they talk about wintertime, they're talking about how important it is to be cuddling up, and forgive me, Maggie, but with a large-breasted woman all night, and there's nothing to keep you warmer better than a large-breasted woman. It's like this whole poetry about why a large-breasted woman keeps you warm. And then there's this whole, and so forgive me, but this is just the poetry text. And then there's whole things about the summertime and how thin the clothing is. And it's thin, and then the clothing gets wet from the sweat, and you can see everything through. Poetry, where they're talking about this. Yeah.
Scandalous.
Scandalous. Extremely, you know, it gets extremely scandalous. But so the seasons, it's all about bringing out that rasa, that emotion, and really going into feelings, and I talk about it in that one article. They describe the seasons, and they like the spring, they say she's like blooming flowers on the trees with the bees, you know, swarming around her, and they make these beautiful, just beautiful, beautiful poetry with the seasons. All right, so that was our seasons. All right. So remember in the very beginning, we said day, month, and year. And so we talked about year with sidereal year. We talked about the tropical year. We talked about the months and the Sankrantis and these variations of the Sankrantis and whether we're going to use a tropical Sankranti, which means, you know, the first new moon after the winter solstice, or whether we're going to use a sidereal Sankranti, which is the first new moon after Makara Sankranti. So we have the year we talked about. We have the month we talked about. Now the day. When's the day begin?
Sunrise.
Why does it not begin at midnight? Whose idea was this midnight day?
That was the... I believe you had mentioned it was from the train schedule.
Trains, and it was for the Industrial Revolution. Brought the midnight time. Because then people could work till late in the night and it would still be on that day. You know? And then they, if they come in early in the morning and work till 9, 10, 12, then it's all that day. So the midnight time was really meant for Industrial Revolution and paying people by the hour. That's where it came from. As an astrologer, and you know, I talked about in the beginning, like one of my dreams is to go to Chile and sleep all day and watch the stars all night, you know, with my astrolabe and sextant and do all the calcs. Now, who made the calendars? The astrologers made the calendars in the old days. So if I'm tracking the movement of the stars and the planets, and I'm saying that on March 8th, that the moon is next to this star, and then 2 hours later I say March 8th at sunset the moon is 2 degrees from that star, and then 3 hours later I say it's 1 degree from that star, and you know, and I'm sitting here tracking the motion of the moon at midnight, all of a sudden I gotta change my log to March 9th. That doesn't work. You know, if I'm tracking the stars for the night, I need the night to be one day. I mean, it needs to all be the same. That way it's all in one logbook. So for astrologers, it was either starting the day at sunset or starting the day at sunrise. Because you want the whole nighttime to be one day. And it doesn't matter whether, you know, it's the beginning of the day or it's the end of the day. But you just want one log, you know, in there. So it's one log. On March 8th, this is what I saw all night long. So for the astrologer, the sunrise or the sunset are the only valid days. The midnight time is the Industrial Revolution and the Kali Yuga in its purest form. When it's 1 o'clock, 2 o'clock at night, and somebody says good morning to me, I'm like, what are you talking about? Good morning. It's 1 o'clock at night. I know that, like, based on the new day, you're calling it morning, but the sun has... You can't call 1 o'clock at night morning. Really?
Do people really... People have said that,
people too. Say that. It's a standard colloquialism in America.
I'm curious. If you're doing practices, like, and you're doing, like, a sankalpa...
Yeah.
Do you usually use... I mean, you'll use whatever tithi it is, like, even if it's, like, an hour before sunrise, you'll still use, I'm sorry, the vara. If you're stating the vara, well, you'll still use whatever vara it is, even if you're close to sunrise.
For sankalpa, you're using the vara after sunrise.
But like I'll do practices, you know, I'll go to sleep tonight, I'll wake up in the morning before sunrise.
Yeah,
you know. And even if it's like close to sunrise, I'll be doing the vara that's at sunrise.
But it's not that vara until the sun has risen.
Yeah, exactly. So use whatever the vara is actually in.
I mean, you are the day before.
You have to define
that sunrise is the change. It's the birth of a new day.
Okay.
And so, from the Vedic perspective, somebody born 15 minutes before sunrise is born on the vara, you know, that the it is that vara of the previous day.
Yeah. That's what I did, but I always just felt weird because, like, it just switched so close a lot of, you know, it's like, I don't know. But, okay.
But that's your Sankalpa is starting on that day, you know? That's what it is. So, and the big thing with the Sankalpa, you're not doing a Sankalpa for the future. One of the concepts of the Sankalpa is to presence yourself. It's to say,
I'm here.
I'm here right now. I'm on planet Earth. I'm in America. I'm in California. I'm in Nevada County, in Nevada City, in the miners' village, in room 303. This is where I am, and to be fully conscious of like that whole everything. So I'm aware of the whole Earth right now and where I am on the Earth. And then with the day, you're stating today is Wednesday. The tithi, the var, you know, all that stuff. It's not about, you know, projecting or doing. You're not stating that Sankalpa to like make the next day good. You're stating it to fully be conscious of where you are at that moment in time, so that you're fully, you're not in the past or the present. You're right there in the present. Not in the past or the future, right here in the present. Did I say that right? So for your Sankalpa, you're aware that you're before sunrise, and that's fine, and that's what matters. All right. So sunrise. We see that there's four different things for sunrise. So there's the center of the sun's disk. At the center of the sun's disk is truly on the eastern horizon. The tip of the sun's disk is truly on the eastern horizon. The tip of the sun's disk appears on the eastern horizon. And then the center of the sun's disk appears on the eastern horizon. What do we use? What are you? Take a moment and look in your Jagannath Hora. See what you are actually using. So we go in there, we go to preferences related to calculations. And let's see, planet, Upagraha, nodal, sunrise, sunset, and special lagna definitions. So in this position here, it says center of the sun's disk, truly on the eastern horizon, tip of the sun's disk, exactly what I have written here. You have the choice of that. Everybody see that?
Mm-hmm.
Everybody know about that? What do you have yours at, Maggie?
The center.
Center truly on the eastern horizon, or as it appears?
Truly.
Oh, but is that right?
I personally think we should use when the tip appears to be on the eastern horizon, because just in the same way that it's what do we say? The whole thing of the whole system of Vedic astrology is from our perspective, right? With the, mm-hmm. you know, even though we know it's heliocentric, we use the earth centric. So it seems like it's our perception is most important.
I like that. So take a minute, and based on that, what is your Pranapada Lagna?
How do I find that?
And I'm just going to open my chart so I can do my Pranapada Lagna too. Or actually, while Justin's here, we'll do Justin's Pranapada Lagna.
Sri Jyoti Star doesn't have the one for the parent. Does it?
I don't know. I don't think so. I think he's straight based on NASA. He's not giving that variation. Hmm. So I'm looking at Justin's with the center as it truly is, and it's Lagna, Sun, Moon. If when you look in your basics, Rahu, Ketu, Mundi, Gulika, Bhava Lagna, Hora Lagna, Vigatika Lagna, all that. I'm gonna look at his Gatika Lagna, his GL, and guess what? We're gonna learn what the GL is later in the book. You're gonna be able to use it. So Justin's Gatika Lagna is 10:35. 38. And it's 38.8, so I'm going to do 39. I'm going to round that up. And his Pranapada
is 23, 32, 42.
Sorry, I'm not seeing. This is under basics.
Under basics, yeah.
I don't see it.
So you see where it says Lagna?
Yeah. Oh.
Sun, Moon, Mars. Just keep following it down. Then after K2, there's Mundi, then Gulika, then Bhava Lagna, which we're going to learn about. Hora Lagna, we're going to learn about. Gatika Lagna, we're going to learn about. Vigatika Lagna, Varnata Lagna. I'm not a fan of Varnata Lagna. Sri Lagna, we're going to learn about. Pranapada Lagna. I just haven't gotten good results with Varnata. So, and I know some people swear by it, but I don't teach it because I don't get good results, so you don't want to learn it from me. you found your Pranapada?
Yeah.
All right. So now let's go to preferences related to calculations. And you wrote down what your Pranapada and your Gatika Lagna is? Write it down. Mm-hmm. Write it down. All three levels. Like, I got 23, 32, 42. And you want to round up, you can write or round up for that last one. And then after you write that down, we're going to go back to preferences, calculations, sunrise definition, and we're going to change it to tip of sun's disk is truly on the horizon. You see the difference?
I do, but I don't know what it means.
My goal is just to teach you that it matters. And when we get into these special lagnas, then you got to know that the sunrise definition is going to be changing these things on a major level.
Wow.
All right, so did you change it to tip of the sun instead of the center of the sun? Did you see how much did your Gatika Lagna change?
By 2 degrees.
Yep, and your Pranapada?
By 7 degrees.
Exactly. So this is that is the difference that it's making. That literally is the difference that it's making in the chart. It's the same. Justin had the same calculation of difference. And let's just for variation, go to related to calculations, and back to sunrise sunset calculations. And let's go to tip of sun's disk as it appears on the eastern horizon, just to see that difference.
Whoa.
That's
weird. Even more, right? And the Pranapada, I mean, it's in a completely, it's a completely different sign. Unless it was in the beginning of the sign. And with the first one, it's changed signs. You know, we're
20 degrees.
We're about 20 degrees difference, yeah. You ready? We got one more one to try out. Preferences related to calculations. So, you know, I can tell you this, but it's unless you see, when you see it yourself, you're going to remember it now, right? Mm-hmm. What this difference is making. And when we do these calculations for the Gatika Lagna and the Pranapada, you'll see that we're basing it on what time sunrise is. And so because we're basing it on sunrise, it's changing this. And so this is going to come in to later calculations. So now we got the last one. So tip of the sun as it appears, right? And that gives us Gatika Lagna back down a little bit, Pranapada back down just a little bit.
Whew. So we see that there's this big variation happening. Now, I use the standard center of the sun as it's truly on the eastern horizon. Why do I use that? That is what NASA uses. When we go into a NASA databank and we say, well, what is sunrise? This is what NASA's using. NASA's using center of the sun in the center, you know, that this is what they are utilizing. And so all our data is being, that our programs are running on are being based on the center of these planets. The center of the moon, the center of the sun. That's their mathematical calculations. And they're going by its true placement. Now, can I swear by it? I can't swear by it. That's why I'm teaching you that there's more variations. You know, this is the modern astronomically correct definition. Now, is it going to be the best one used for astrology? You know, somebody's got to do some hardcore research to figure that one out. And
have you played with the other ones to see results and all that? I mean,
when I'm not getting a good result from a special lugna, you know, I just sit there and I look at the degree, and knowing that it moves, that it can gain approximately seven degrees in a shift, I just keep that in mind when I'm looking at it. And if I have something that is like I'm looking at the Hora Lugna and it's 27 degrees, and if I don't get a good result, then I'll look at what would be the result if it was in another sign. But that's as far, but I've done nothing statistical or scientific in that research. I'm just aware that, and I use the Hora Lugna. Hora Lugna is real important to see trust fund people. You know, the people that are walking around with big trust funds, and Hora Lugna has a lot to do with trust funds. People just born naturally wealthy and people that are going to become wealthy as they get older. So we have to utilize that Hora Lugna. Bill Gates, these kind of people, like Hora Lugna calculations become super important. All right. So we got how important this little definition is. And we got what I'm using. And Maggie is going to use the tip instead.
Sanjay teaches the tip, doesn't he? Or does he teach with refraction?
He always says for puja and sadhana to use refraction because that's what Varahamihira uses.
You mean like the light filtering through the sky?
Through this, what it appears. Because you see, you actually see it sooner than it actually is there.
The light or the sun itself?
It looks like the sun has risen before it's actually risen. Because the way the light is bending and moving through the sky, it actually looks like it's risen, you know, like a minute or so before it's actually there. A minute. I don't, you know, it's not even that, it's very minimal. That refraction difference. But you see with our special lugnas, and I use the Gatika lugna and the Pranapata lugna because they're very sensitive points. And so that changing of sunrise alters them in drastic. You see, the Pranapata, it's a big deal. And with the Pranapata, we are very heavily relying on the Pranapata and the Navamsha. So we want an accurate Navamsha of the Pranapata. So it's a big deal, you know? And so something that changes that much, can we rely on that Pranapata in the Navamsha? Because, yeah, we'll leave it at that. When we get the Pranapata, we'll talk more. All right, we're getting to 8. Let's cover Metonic Cycle so we can start with Draconic Month next time. And you guys are all getting a good amount out of this, even though you've listened to the audio and everything.
This is still, we're not repeating or, okay. It's making it so it lands more, yeah?
Yeah.
So, metonic cycle, and it's named after this guy, Meton, which, I mean, it's very clear that Meton did not discover it. You know, it's kind of like Columbus. Like, Columbus, like, he discovered America for Spain, for Spanish people, because Spanish people didn't know about it. But there was people living here, and kingdoms, and pyramids, and you know, like, I mean, they're digging up bones. Like, they used to, the lie that colonialists say is that they were here for 2,000 years before us. But recent, like, in Florida, they just dug up burials of people that are 8,000 years, have been here for over 8,000 years. And in Washington State, they've recently did an excavation of a cave from a guy that's been here for 9,000 years. He was 9,000 years he'd been here. And the U.S. was saying that they could dig him up and make him archaeological because he wasn't the same as the people that were there. They were 2,000 years and he was 9,000 years, so he had to be something different. And they did the DNA test on him, and he was the same genetics as the people living in that local area. And so they said, see, we win. And so they had to give all the remains back to the tribe because they, you know, because of the tribal laws. Because if he is, you know, if it is one of their graves, then it's their area. It's not the American archaeological whatever. And so they had to give back. So 9,000 years back, there's people living here in the Americas. And Columbus acted like he discovered it. So that's Meton discovering the metonic cycle is the same thing. People were utilizing it. People were aware of it. He kind of made it so that it was official in the textbooks, and so they named it after him. And we can see that even in the Babylonian clay tablets, that they noticed the 19-year cycle. And I always go back to the Babylonian clay tablets because they were clay tablets. They're our oldest record because they were written in clay. And so they date back the farthest out of any astronomical thing we have, minus some cave paintings in France and some bones that have some chips of lunar cycles in them. But our oldest, most detailed calendrical information comes from the Babylonian clay tablets. So it's important to look here. And let's pop real fast back over to page 54. So here we did it with lunations. Now we're going to do it with a slightly different look. In year zero of Kali Yuga, so from zero to one, that first year, which we call year zero, the new moon was at the beginning of the year. And so at the very beginning was new moon. Now the next year, after that first year, the new moon was 18 days after the beginning of the year. So if we use that Makara Sankranti time period, it was the Makara Sankranti was new moon, and then the next year the new moon was 18 days after Makara Sankranti. And then we have a intercalary month, and the new moon is 7 days after Makara Sankranti, right? Everybody following that? And then the next year, the new moon is 26 days after Makara Sankranti. And then the next year, 15 days. And then we have an intercalation, and then it becomes 4 days after this. So you see this cycle. So now if you look over here on page 59, and if you can look at both, that first number of year one, we have for year zero, we have zero. So it started on the same day. For year one, we have 18.64. Do you see that matches the number of days over here in on page 54? It says 18.63888868812. I just rounded it up to 18.64. Look at what the next year, it was
Do you see that? That the next year, year two, 3104, the new moon was 7 days and 7.47 days in. And so here it's 7.75. So you see that's just carrying this over. So we all get where the data's coming from, right? Mm-hmm. So now if we look and we go down this list, year one, year two, year three, year four, we see that at year 20, it repeats. So that 1864 on one becomes 1841. After 19 years, we get a repeat. Everybody see that? Add 19 more years and we get another repeat. We're back on 18. And notice that the repeat, it's not exact, but it's very, very similar. The fact that that repeat happens, that's the metonic cycle, or what we call the Brahma chakra. It's the 19-year period that it all repeats. Now, if we look at these, there's things called tidal maps of high tide, low tide, high tide, low tide. Those maps repeat every 19 years as well. Based on this, because of this, you know. All right. So we got the... Huh? All right. And those tidal maps are based on the metonic cycle, the draconic cycle, and the anomalistic months. That's basically controlling the tides of the Earth. We pop over to page 60, and this this is my kick that I bring in here. And does everybody know the Antikytheria mechanism?
I think we talked about it a little in here.
Yeah. You know about it, Maggie?
Well, I read about it in the book.
Okay. You, Justin, know about it?
Yeah, they found it in a wrecked ship, right?
Yep, and they originally dated it the first century BCE, and they've changed that date 100 years back now. So this is a machine that calculated the metonic cycle. It calculated the elliptical orbits of the planets. It calculated the draconic cycles. It just like it was like they. It's considered the first, the earliest analog computer we have. You know, in its ability.
They just found one.
They only found one. And it's a silly debate. The debate is this the only one that existed? And then the other debate is, this is an extremely complex machine. And it's not possible that this machine, somebody just made it up and never made up any other machine. In order, it's like if somebody found an iPhone 10 in 1,000, 2,000 years from now, and to sit there and say that iPhone 10, somebody just, you know, and they didn't have phones at that point, and they're like, oh, somebody just made this up. Like, no, you know, there's like multiple years and prototypes, and you know what I mean? Like, it evolved into the iPhone, you know, we're just at iPhone 7 right now. So who knows what the heck is iPhone 10 gonna look like?
Holograms.
So you know, this if this was found, you know, what they thought was in the first century BC, now they're thinking second century BCE. There must have been minimum 100 years of development to get to this. Minimum. There could have, but it could have also been 200-300 years that it took to get to this. And there's mention in the Vedic texts about machines and things of that nature. People always blow it off as a very fanciful thing. But right here we have proof that in that ancient time period, not only did they have cog devices, but they had accurately astronomically calculating devices. Before they discovered this,
science believed that cogged machines did not exist till the 12th century. So this means that they were 1,400 years wrong. Minimum. And who knows if even longer. And so I put this in here, one, because it has the metonic cycle in it, but also just to make it so that we don't believe all the dating that these humans that... humans with limited perspectives have. And one of the things I always bring up about, you know, when they date the Vedic texts, the people that were dating the Vedic texts, like, and just as an example, some of the dating was done in the early 1800s. And we're still using the dating done in the early 1800s. And they were done by extremely religious Protestant people who believed that the planet was 5,000 years old. And that God created Adam and Eve, and like that's why we're here. So these people that believed that the that our planet was 5,000 years old were dating Vedic texts, and we're still using their dating. It's still considered official.
There's a lot of that. There's so much in the scientific community, I think,
of outdated stuff.
Yeah, and biased towards like limiting our history.
Yep. And a lot of it comes from the fact that a lot of it was dated when people believed that our planet was only 5,000 years old because that's how old the Bible said it was. And if they said it was, if they said something was 6,000 years old, they could lose their university position and be thrown out of academia. Wow. They could lose their university position if they said it was 6,000 years old.
Stuff like that is still true today.
Yeah. So the Antikytherian mechanism, to me, it's very symbolic. A reminder that, you know, they were minimum 1,400 years off in their dating. All right. So next week we're going to do Draconic Month and I don't know if we'll get into the big units of time. It depends what we do with eclipses. Because since I was going to try and cover the eclipses today and squeeze it in, but because I didn't, then maybe we can bring out some of the Abhinavagupta Tantra Loka stuff. And talk about what they say to do in eclipses and all that kind of stuff. Get some like good juicy stuff in here. But so make sure that you've read 68 up to page 68 before next class. And maybe we'll try and finish the chapter, but I won't rush it. But we'll definitely focus on eclipses next time. And make sure that you don't say any stupid things about eclipses. Oh my goodness. People just, it never surprises me where somebody says, oh my gosh, there's two eclipses in 1 month. Like, what's this mean? Oh my God, there's two eclipses in 1 month. As if like, it doesn't happen twice every year that there's two eclipses in a month. But all right. So read that and you know, read it so that I can quiz you and you guys can answer me and then I can like add on, you know? Because that's much more fun for me. and then it's gonna be more fun for you because instead of me explaining it, we can add on and talk about how it's utilized instead of just, you know, explaining what it is. All right. We're good. We're on next week, just after Sankranti, just after the hinge. All right.
Cool.
Namaskar.
Namaskar.